Okay, we are Thursday'd up. It is still Thursday. Welcome to Thursday, and welcome to the Hope This Helps podcast. We've made it to episode 3 before Valve did, so we are still here.
Hooray! Woo. And we've done better releases than Blizzard on a good day.
I know, right?
yeah. And we didn't bring down the servers on a Tuesday.
We did not. Nothing has gone down today as far as I know, except for Taco Bell mobile ordering. Holy crap.
Wait,
yeah,
what?
Wait a minute.
Wait, hold on. All right, on.
Let's start this out with a big old story about Taco Bell just from based on a couple of hours ago. So I decided I was going to order Taco Bell and get it scheduled for a pickup here. And so I ordered it. It said it went through, went just fine. Said your order will be available at 5:45. I was like, cool. It takes a half hour to get home. I'm going to get Taco Bell after going to the gym. Go there, walk into Taco Bell. I say, hey, I got an order for Steve. And they go, all right, let me check the system. They go, the only orders we have in our mobile order system is for Ryan. And I was like, I'm definitely not Ryan. And here is literally the receipt on my phone for my mobile order for this address. Is this not the address? And she looks at it and she's like, it's missing a digit on the zip code. And I'm like, I picked this from a list. I didn't type this. This is from the Taco Bell app. I mobile ordered it. It charged me. Here is my bank notification telling me that it charged me. Where am I food at? So, like any rational person, you would think that they would say, well, let me, ask around. But this person says, no, I'm just going to say you can order again and I'll charge you again. I was like, are you kidding me? So I would have argued it, but there was like kids behind me and stuff. So I said, okay, fine. Like, let me just order the same thing again. So they did it. They charged me again. So I'm sitting there and I'm just like, I just want the food at this point. I'm just hangry. And then suddenly this random dude from the kitchen comes behind. He goes, are you Steve? And I was like, yeah. He's like, I have a mobile order. And he says it right in front of the person who just took my order. And she looks to him like, are you serious? And I'm also looking at the both of them. I'm like, are you serious? He was like, unbelievable. Wow. So luckily they did refund me and I just gave them like the are you kidding me looks like the whole time. I was like, how did you guys bungle this so badly? And in the time that I was there, other people also came in with mobile orders and they also said they didn't have them. And yeah, so talk about mobile ordering either went down or these people are not very smart at their mobile ordering queues.
Did you give them like the emoji hands as well? Like,
I kind of gave like the gesture of like, hey man, what is going on?
Why?
Kind of like that noise your cat just made, except.
Yeah, she is very angry with me
right
now.
Yeah, that was, well, luckily that was basically me in the store, but.
That was good timing.
Incredibly
thanks,
good
cat.
Timing. Wow. Welcome to Hope This Helps podcast with special guest the cat.
Yeah, Widget.
I don't have lasagna in here tonight. She was asleep on the chair, and then she got up as soon as she saw me rustling, doing stuff, and I just removed her from the room. So
she will not let you do this.
Lasagna loves technology a little bit too much, particularly my keyboards.
She's obsessed. Yep. My cat is trying to open the door currently.
Oh, wow.
And she's actually succeeding. Nope, she's gonna do it.
Has she grown thrums?
Come on, cat. Apparently.
Wow.
And she
Woo-hoo.
Did it.
Go cat.
Yeah. Look, she did it herself.
That is excellent.
You give a cat a closed door and they will figure out how to open it.
I'm so proud right now.
So this week is January, well, it's not January 16th this week, but today is January 16th, 2020.
It was January 16th at some point, and it is January 16th right now, and maybe it will be January 16th again someday, but by the time anyone's listening to this, it's probably not.
Correct. In news this week, RIP Windows 7 and Server 2008 R2.
The madness is finally over.
It is over. So for anybody who still has Server 2008 R2 or Windows 7, you should probably GTFO.
It would be highly recommended. In fact, I logged into a machine I still had Windows 7 on, and there was a huge full screen message that took over the entire monitor telling you just precisely how over Windows 7 support is. And funny enough, as I went to click into it, it was doing a nice little fading animation to give you presumably a close button or a learn more about Windows 10 button. It promptly crashed on me. So that was a fitting end to Windows 7.
I kind of imagine the Oregon Trail dying music, like after you've caught cholera or one of those random diseases that kills you
Windows
quickly.
Windows 7 has died of dysentery.
Or it
was trying to ford the river and the oxen died.
Yeah. Bye.
Rip F. Rest in pepperonis.
Bye, Felicia.
It's weird cousin Server 2008 R2 is also dead.
Yeah, for most enterprise environments, though, I have a feeling or a sneaking suspicion that many places are still running on Server 2008.
Oh, it will be with us for many, many more years beyond the date of death, just stinking up the place and not receiving updates and being your primary attack vector for most enterprise networks. Until it slowly fades away in 20 years, just like Windows 2003 did.
And for those of us who have environments that still have that, yay!
Woohoo.
Woohoo. In other news this week, the NSA has also released a vulnerability. So that's exciting.
Yeah.
Exciting news. The NSA is now apparently transparent.
I would say they're probably less transparent as much as someone probably found out about one of the many libraries of exploits that they were using, and maybe they just got nervous that it might be starting to be exposed in the wild, so they did us a solid and they told us about this one, and they told Microsoft, hey, patch this, please.
I just find it rather funny because these vulnerabilities happen all the time in the Exchange world. And once in a while, they'll be critical, but very rarely are they actually critical.
I am unsure as to what the criticality of this is ultimately going to be, because when it was first released, it was very vague. Petri and Krebs on Security was calling it like a drop everything and patch this patch. And as the day progressed, it became a, yes, this is important, patch this as soon as it's out, to... is this really important? To now there seems to be a 50-50 split. You have the camp of, yes, this needs to be patched immediately. And then there's the camp of, only patch the newest editions of Windows. And then there's other people that say, this is no different than most other exploits. Just continue your standard patching cycles. So this has left me thoroughly confused. For me, it depends on who I ask as to how important it is. So I honestly don't know what to make of this at this point. The vulnerability is supposedly encrypt 32.dll, which has supposedly been around since Windows NT 4.0, but had been considered nothing but an add-on, or at least the way it was implemented has been like an MMC add-on all the way up to like Windows 10 and Server 2016. So supposedly older versions of Windows are actually surprisingly more protected than the newer ones for this, because it wasn't an integral part of the operating system. So I really don't know. Just my hands are just in the air on this one.
Well, yes. Well, originally when it was announced, it was just an important. Microsoft had marked it as important, and then the NSA went public with it to warn people of the vulnerability, because they feel as if having the ability to have a spoofed signed certificate is a big deal, which, to people who don't know, having a spoofed signed certificate is kind of a big deal, but for most people, or most attackers, that's not what they're going after.
Right. I was reading online that this could particularly be really abused for, like, drivers and things, but
yeah.
It could mask itself as a legitimate signed driver, but... you know, again, it's the standard rules of, if you're going to download a driver, don't go to some shady site or ad site. Go to the actual vendor site, like Microsoft or whomever, Dell. And unless they're compromised, I think there's a fairly low threat here.
And for your typical users in an enterprise environment or most, you're going to have UAC and other sorts of protections already in place that aren't going to let you download from an unauthorized site anyways.
Especially And also especially a controlled folder access, which is one of my favorite more less advertised features of Windows 10, which of course will protect your file system from getting ransomware very easily using it's a distrust first in terms of its strictness. And so it's actually a little too strict. It takes a while to actually use it to get it to not nuke a lot of your existing programs from saving files. But once you get it up and running and you have a decent whitelist set up, it's a really, really handy thing to have.
Yeah, and there's definitely ways to protect yourself as a user without going crazy and patching everything. But on the server side of the house, unless you're installing stuff from unknown trusts, you're really probably not going to be any worse off.
Yeah, precisely. So I guess it was probably a little less cause for alarm at the end of the day after all was said and done, after all the hubbub died down. So who knows?
Yeah, it's no worse than the one that was recently, sometime last year, where the attacker could take basically elevate themselves to an administrator and then have either domain or enterprise admin from just getting through an exploit on Exchange 2010.
Yeah, that one was particularly really bad.
So that on a scale of 1 to bad, that to me is bad. This just seems overly cautious.
This one seems in the mild, I don't know, 4 or 5 out of 10 after all is said and done. It's one of those could be proof of concepted, but will it actually be used in the wild? Who knows?
Right.
So, who knows? It'll be one of those things where we'll see. Usually most places may be a month behind on their patching cycles. It's possible that, by February we'll be dealing with something else entirely, so we'll see. There's a lot of really odd things going on in the cyber world right now, particularly with certain worldwide events. There's been news of Russia and Iran stepping up their cyber warfare games. Anecdotally, I've noticed random things being up or down. Whether or not it's a coincidence or not is up for debate. Funny enough, it seems to be all about mobile orders that seem to not be quite working right. We've had the issue of Taco Bell mobile ordering not quite functioning correctly. We've also had Dunkin' Donuts being up and down. So whether or not their cyber attacks are very, very stealthily defined hits on various infrastructure remains to be seen. But other than that, stay patched, stay off Windows 7. Work and be vigilant. If you see something, say something. And that's about all I have to say about that, for sure.
Before you attack it, wrap it?
Yeah, it's standard life advice that works in the digital world as well as everything else that we experience. So,
yeah, I'm not really sure that fit, but I made it work anyways. I do need to BRB for 1 second, or maybe.
Yeah, that's no problem. I can talk about some stuff in the meantime.
Okay, all right.
I can shuffle things around. So that can shuffle us into one topic I really want to begin my mini TED talk about, is just certain things about PowerShell. I've touched in the past about certain ways, certain things I can do in PowerShell, but it helps to just kind of, just ramble and overall just shoot the crap about how my methodologies for PowerShell work. So I think one thing I tend to see a lot online, or I get questions about both in work or in various random Reddit threads, are what you usually can do to handle input and output of data, particularly with CSV files, Active Directory data, PS custom objects and tables, and all kinds of things. Usually in PowerShell, what you will mostly end up doing is what is called a for each loop, or the for each dash object function, which is a wrapping loop. If you are familiar with Java, it is the for loop. Almost every major programming language that is object oriented contains this in some syntactical method one way or another. So In PowerShell, there's mostly, from what I experienced, two ways to do a for each. You can either call it traditionally, where you can say for each x in y, which basically defines the current iterative variable in the loop right in the declaration of the for each loop, where I could say, so say I have a list and I'm calling it my banana list. I would define my loop as for each banana and banana list. Every time the loop iterates through banana list, the loop is processing on every item inside the banana list, and the defined variable is called banana. You don't need to define this variable, and you don't need to reset this variable, because every time the loop terminates, it then sets the next item as banana. It'll continue until the loop is complete. The other primary way I've seen for each loops work in PowerShell is the object pipe for each object. What this does by default is it will take your previously passed in object, hopefully, which is a plurality of items, and you can pipe it to for each, which will then open up your loop. But you'll notice that there is no defined variable in this type of loop that you can see. But in the background, PowerShell does define the current item in the loop as something called PSItem, which is aliased to what I like to call $under, which is the literal character alias to PSItem. And if you are passing in a PS object or a PS table, you would do a $under dot column name or item name of the table. And then you can get all kinds of freaky and fancy with that from there on. But those are the two main ways I see how for each loops are done in PowerShell. And it's just something to keep in mind. There's more than one way to skin a cat in PowerShell. There's more than one ways to define a loop in PowerShell. It all depends on your preference. And you also have to look out for certain things, like how if you're doing a for each object and you need to utilize an iterative variable inside something like getADUserFilter, and you're going to use that iterative variable in the filter, you got to watch out, because I've encountered what may be a bug, what may be a feature, is PSItem or $under will not correctly pass into getADUserFilter. So what I've ended up having to do to get around it in the past is I would declare the $under current iterative variable into its own dedicated named variable if I was doing pipe for each. Otherwise, I would just do for each banana and banana list, and then $banana will get passed into getADUserFilter. So just little things to look out for. Probably confuses newbies or rookies, but just things I've learned over time and nice things to know when you're coding PowerShell.
I definitely have learned the hard way with the dollar sign and passing that through.
Yes. Yep. I've also done that. I've spent many hours troubleshooting something that ended up just being a null variable reference, and I thought I had to rewrite my entire script, and then I realized, if I just threw this into its own variable, and it was explicitly called, then it would be problem solved. And it also gets very saucy
when you start using exchange commands, because how exchange passes through is different.
Yes, particularly I've noticed recently, I've noticed this at work with the change from Exchange 2010 to Exchange 2016. There's even been some changes in behavior in PowerShell Exchange if you're using the Exchange Management Shell. It has to do with serialized objects. It is very, very, very small change. Very like minor changes to the way syntax and objects are passed through, but it's enough to break your script unless you know what you're looking for. Anecdotally, I think I remember most recently it had to do with get mailbox statistics and the last logon date of a user. You now have to, in Exchange 2016, convert that output to two-string before you can actually pull it. Otherwise, you're going to just get a blank value in return. Because I had a script that worked in Exchange 2010 for getting all the mailboxes, and suddenly it stopped pulling the last login date value in Exchange 2016. And after a lot of trial and error and trying to go through all my notes, I just think I just tried a two string and then I realized, oh, okay, now it's working again.
I see. Why did
Microsoft change this ever so subtly?
That makes sense.
Yeah. So, for all I know, maybe they're fixing a bug that was in Exchange 2010 where it wasn't honoring.
There are definitely some interesting practice, things in Exchange 2010 with the two string and how it converts some of the values. So I definitely know that that is.
Yeah.
I don't think it's a bug. I just think it's how from the old Exchange days.
Yeah, yes. For sure. It's mildly annoying, but there are ways around it if you just can get creative
yes.
with more or less the basics of string manipulation or typecasting or conversion or
lots
all that kind
of
stuff.
Of that. And lots of hash tables.
Yeah. So, yeah, that. Yes, hash tables are very nice to know. Hash tables, custom objects, custom PS objects, everything like that. Because those are pipeable, those are selectable, they're sortable, they're out-grid viewable, they're exportable to CSV, they're really manipulative.
All right.
And stringable, yes.
Yay, PowerShell.
So, yeah, that was my little soapbox about a couple of PowerShell things. I could bore you to death with other things, but I don't know. We could do it for next time. Yeah, sure. We'll call that the PowerShell TED Talk of the Week, and maybe we'll save some for later or make this a recurring segment if we
want. I don't know. I
kind
of like how you named
we'll
it Deep Desk PowerShell.
There, so.
No, I like it.
Yeah, I couldn't think of a better name than that.
It's kind of like
yeah.
Debbie Does
we'll,
Dallas.
We'll keep it that. We'll call it Steve Does PowerShell. We'll...
Sorry.
Yeah.
It's the only thing I can think of.
Yeah. If PowerShell was a city, it would be Dallas. Okay. And we're going to be doing Dallas.
No, you are Steve all day.
My name is not Debbie, by the way.
Steve 24/7.
24/7.
And you're doing Dallas.
Yeah. Yep. So, anyways, so we've got the PowerShell topic out of the way. I believe you wanted
analytics.
To talk a little
so,
bit about my analytics.
There is this wonderful program inside of Office 365 or M365, whatever way you swing these days, called My Analytics. It's on by default in most all tenants except for Germany and some government ones. And it does utilize a license. It's the My Analytics license. And what this program does is it is a productivity analysis program. And it is meant to give a user an analysis on how to improve their work productivity. So it uses the interaction between coworkers and anybody inside of your Office 365 tenant and aggregates a lot of data on how you're utilizing your workday. So it will send you weekly recaps and digests on if I emailed Steve 60 times that week, it'll tell me that I emailed him 60 times and that I spend 80% of my day talking to Steve. And so for some people, this is a really great way to help them organize their lives and get back on track. For others and some and GDPR and other sorts of organizations, this is a nightmare because in some countries and some organizations, there is a lot of pressure and a lot of stigma around these kinds of software that does analytics on a user and on a person that can create a judgment around how they're performing. So what does this mean? So my analytics is only available to that user. So only a user can see their own personal analytics. It does, however, it is aggregating on Microsoft's side. So however they choose to use the data based on their privacy and policies when you sign up for O365, I don't know how it's being utilized. But for some organizations, this needs to be turned off. So what does that mean? It's a three-step process. So you have to make sure all users are unlicensed. You have to make sure it is off globally in the tenant, in the settings and configurations. And you also have to run it through every user to turn off the, basically you have to set them to being on private. So there are some PowerShell scripts out there, just some basic for each loops that run through and set each user to being off. However, Microsoft does have this as default, so if you do have licensing scripts or groups created, you don't really want to have anyone who is on a separate licensing. So if you have them as a dedicated license versus a group license, you want to make sure that you have those up to date, because My Analytics will be on by default. So anytime, yeah, if you have any like if you have the new feature rollouts, it will get turned on in that. So could it be a really good piece of software for some users, some organizations? Maybe. I don't really see any value in it for myself. Also, other than it being a GDPR and a nightmare with some other organizations and countries that do take personal data analytics very seriously. So it kind of creates this nightmare of ethics, really, of do you want it on, do you want it off? But I think for most people, or at least for me personally, I would prefer if Microsoft allowed you to have it off from the get-go.
The answer definitely gets to be more leaning towards right. No, the more global your organization probably is. GDPR definitely makes that a more easy decision, an easier decision than it would be if you were just a small organization in the United States or a single country. You have to abide by international laws for sure. It is pretty concerning that's on by default. That's something that Microsoft does lately that I really don't like. To piggyback onto that, this week, or end of last week, rather, Microsoft Teams enabled red receipts by default. Just randomly turned it on one day. My Teams client randomly updated, and I got a pop-up notification over the contacts list telling me, we've enabled red receipts. Now everyone can see when you've read their message. And my immediate reaction was, no, let's turn this off ASAP. Went right into the settings, and yep, it was turned on by default. It previously wasn't 30 seconds prior. So that was flipped off, and then I had to contact some folks who govern our Office 365, and I said, we need to turn this off now. This ethically is questionable. If it wasn't a consensual change where folks can suddenly read messages, that, whether you like it or not, that does change the way that folks behave when they see messages or know that the other party has read their message, or vice versa. And furthermore, it's just a major change to a production environment that wasn't warranted, just wasn't scheduled or announced, just came out. So that's something that Microsoft really needs to work on and understand, that this is just not acceptable in a lot of environments.
Right, and when you do go back to the GDPR thing, where a person's performance could be possibly judged on whether or not how often they read their messages and so forth, you could start utilizing those sorts of things as a person's response time, because really, truly, when it comes down to it, to loop back in My Analytics, that's what it's doing. It's taking an aggregate of how fast you respond to someone, how much time you spend on a person in your organization or multiple people. So if you look at automatically turning red receipts on as default, that's sort of the same idea, the same mentality of allowing people inside of your organization to sort of see how productive you are along with yourself, or creating a judgment.
Yeah, and that's basically it. I have another topic that could go from this vein. I'm going to save it for the segment that we will get to shortly. If we are, I don't know if we have anything more to say about
My Analytics. I think that covers it all.
That's cool. My Analytics, something I had not heard of until you told me about it. And I don't think I am keen to use it anytime soon unless there's some clear benefit. But so far, it doesn't sound like it's been sold to me just quite yet.
No, it honestly, for me, is a time waster, a time sink, because I'm just like, okay, these are things I'm already aware of. I know who I talk to every day and how much time I spend on them.
Yeah, absolutely.
I don't need to be reminded.
So let's get to our sponsor this week. Our sponsor this week, hope this helps, is Helped By Please Advise. If someone needs help, please advise. If you want help, please advise. But be sure to never please advice. Start now with offer code ADVISE to receive your first advice free. And thank you very much to Please Advise for sponsoring this week's show.
I don't have words for
Please
that.
Advise.
What? No. No,
I
no,
have
no.
two.
Stop.
Please and advise.
It burns.
Don't you? I get a lot of nightmares about people who would end emails with please advise, and the emails barely
I mean, it's
contained
kind of like
coherent
hope this
sentences to
helps.
begin with. It is like the polar opposite of hope this helps, or it results in a hope this helps as a response to a support request that
Or the
barely made any
FYI
sense in the
below.
first place. Yeah, FYI or see below or please refer to
And it's a
this.
giant email chain.
Yes, that's literally what I was about to say. This email chain that's like 15 emails deep and the topic has changed 7 times since then.
Nothing makes sense in it.
The original request was done by someone else who has left the company, and it has morphed and been passed around to many people. And by the time it's at the end, you're like, why isn't this just a new email thread or something else entirely?
Yes, the game of telephone.
The IT game of telephone starts with please advise and ends with hope this helps.
What was that game? You probably never played it. It was definitely geared towards young females, but it was a game. It was a board game, and it came with a telephone.
Oh.
And it was a pink telephone.
Was it Dream Phone?
Yes, that's what I feel like IT is like.
I only know of it just from I've seen there's what's it called? There's a video series from Cinemassacre, James Rolfe. He did a series called Board James. One of the episodes was Dream Phone. I think I know it from that.
Probably. But that's what IT is like.
Yeah.
You have to figure it all out.
It's Dream Phone on some days and Fib Finder on the next.
Ooh, or even Ad Lib sometimes,
Yes.
or you could totally have a game show.
Yeah. A lot of times, if it's in a production system and you're making a change, it's a game of operation.
Oh yes. Yes. Don't touch the edge too much because you're gonna get zapped. You know what? No, you're always gonna get zapped, especially working in ops.
It's the whole entire board is electrified, whether or not you're touching the electrical contacts or not.
Yes, that is
So,
true. All
yeah.
right. Talking about getting deep.
Yeah, so we're going to uncover all of the super special secrets of IT, and we're going to
Well,
go.
I heard that we had a special agent who went in and into the IT deep state.
Oh, that is, and it definitely was not me. I'm just a third party reporter for a third party outlet who is reporting
Right.
on the IT deep state.
The IT deep state
Let's be
today.
begin with the state of the Zunion. This is the state of the Zune MP3 player in the year 2020. The state of the Zunion is dire. There are not a lot of us remaining, but I can assure you that it does still work. You can still sync your podcast, including this one, to your Zunes. Music, videos, video podcasts even, which it has support for, back when podcasts used to somehow be video and including audio, but all are supported in the Zunion. So, to all my Zunion patriots, stay strong, stay vigilant, don't believe
Wait,
everything you hear. The Zune is still alive.
how many of the, what is there, like three people?
We can round up.
Okay, to what, four?
Four.
Okay, so four people total.
I count as like 3.5 because I own two Zunes.
Okay, so you get inflated 0.5 personality, like people, like physical people, because you have 2.5.
One Zune, one vote. I have 2 Zunes.
Oh, okay.
This is how the deep state of IT operates.
Okay, well then.
Anyways, next on the deep state docket. Microsoft has been apparently either caught or had previously been discovered to be outsourcing Cortana and Skype audio to China for either analytics or for telemetry or either one of those. The Guardian reported on it, which was then picked up by Gizmodo. And it's not great because there were apparently no security measures. And just quote here, I don't even remember them doing proper KYC, aka know your customer, on me. I think they just took my Chinese bank account details. So, yeah, slightly out of context, but the overall article does remain in that vein of just similar to how Amazon Alexa and Google Home have been rather very unrestrictedly recording voices and storing them on servers. Sometimes the analytics folks are actual humans, similar to how Apple had also been caught doing something similar for Siri with, I believe it was, their call centers were based out of Ireland for the analytics. But Microsoft has taken that one extra step and taking it to call centers in China and where security has apparently been lax, according to reports. So be careful, watch what you say, disable Cortana. Maybe blacklist some IPs, but that's what's out there.
Or say all of the things.
Or you can just say everything and just cloud up the channels entirely where none of your musings make any sense by the end of it all.
Like this podcast. Nothing makes sense at all.
This podcast is a prime example of complete noise with not a lot of substance to it.
Wait, so Apple is scanning iCloud photos for abuse?
So,
like, what kind of abuse?
It has been. I didn't have the link here. I apparently forgot to paste it into the bullet point. Yeah. Apple apparently scans every iCloud photo uploaded to the service for evidence of what the way it was worded was child abuse.
Okay.
But apparently, the process is they have to scan every photo for it. And I guess my question is, how does an algorithm or AI, whatever you want to call it, determine what is quote-unquote child abuse versus what isn't? And how good is that algorithm, and how deeply are your photos really getting scanned? It's kind of a dicey question, if you ask me.
This feels very one-hour photo-like.
Yeah.
I've seen that movie. I know it happens.
I might have seen it, I just don't remember anything about it.
It was the creepiest Robin Williams movie ever.
Ooh. I'll have to be sure to check that out.
Yeah, so the premise of it was it was that Robin Williams played this older gentleman who worked at a photo, like a one-hour photo booth, but he was like stalking this family and basically their children through the photos as he developed them.
Oh, that's fine.
And he like weaseled his way into the family, and like eventually it was uncovered that he knew so much about them from their photos, and it all clicked and it ended very badly, and it was very sad. It wasn't really sad because this man was very creepy, but yeah, that's what it sounds like.
Oh, that's wonderful. Yeah, so imagine that, but imagine like Apple doing it or Siri doing it, and they're not Robin Williams.
Right, and I really hope like they're reporting what they do find.
One can only hope they do. I mean, the legitimate purpose it was built for is pretty sound. It's sad that, you know, the whole thing has to be scanned. You know, the sacrifice needed to do that is something of note.
Yeah. From back in the day, when I had a retail job doing migration, data migrations, if we were to find anything along those lines, we had to report them to the authorities.
Right, yeah.
So it's good to see that same thing still being followed.
Yeah. I can see, though, if folks are relatively uncomfortable with any of their photos being scanned for any reason, or if they are potentially falsely flagged, you better hope that that system is very well tuned, and however it is scanning for such acts, you better hope that it better catch the right ones and not the wrong ones. Therefore, you might be dealing with some unexpected issues.
And if you are concerned, you don't have to use iCloud.
Absolutely. I still do not use... I use iCloud very sparingly. Particularly, I think I'm only really using it for the mail and the contacts. I do not use iCloud Photos. Primarily, my original reason for not using iCloud Photo was just the constricted space. 5 gigs is just not enough to really do anything with
No.
So what I do is I store... I basically take and store all my photos locally on the devices, and I will just manually export them to my computer via the good old USB cable.
Yeah.
I am not a big fan of just photos and cloud services, as over the years I've just determined that I just don't like that. I just don't like the prospect of personal photos in the cloud. So it's just easier to honestly set up just a local Plex server where I know I can turn it on and off as I please. And it's basically a private cloud. Private clouds are nice. Public clouds, not so much.
Right. No, I liked Flickr because they had some good privacy policies, but then Yahoo decided to sell them off, and then they got rid of their unlimited lifetime guarantee of 1 terabyte and their privacy policy, so I removed all of my photos and said, good day.
Yeah, Flickr is basically more or less going away anyway, I think.
Yeah.
I think they're having some financial troubles right now because the Yahoo sale and all that.
Yeah, definitely would do it, but...
I believe the founder said something about we cannot sustain our current financial model, and they can't continue to do some things that they had been doing for which define their service and all kinds of wonderful end of life company things that start to come out.
Right. So Flickr will probably go away someday.
Flickr will not proceed.
The flame will no longer flicker.
That's just what happens in the IT deep state. To round this off, there's been an article that I recently more or less rediscovered. I knew about this and then forgot about it for a while, and now I've rediscovered it. Windows 10 actually tends to ignore certain keywords, even if they are placed in your host file, particularly for a lot of servers on Microsoft-based content and servers. So if you are planning to lock down an environment and using only the host files on Windows, be aware that certain domains such as windowsupdate.microsoft.com, msdn.microsoft.com, msn.com, msdn, all those kinds of things are hard-coded in a layer above or below the host file where the host file will not block it. If you want to block those, you have to do it at the network level. So have fun. Apparently this has been a thing since Windows XP Service Pack 2. So that's absolutely wonderful to discover.
That is fun. That's a good time.
Yeah, and that concludes our week in the IT deep state.
I definitely feel like we need some like news music there. Some IT deep state.
I'm sure we can get something piped in some way. I wasn't planning on doing it live. I think we'll do it in post. So whatever you're hearing is wonderful post editing deep state music.
Yeah. All right.
So what else do we got? We've kind of jumped around in our original order, which is fine.
So it looks like we really hit all of our topics. So my question this week to all of our listeners, which I'm pretty sure is just you and I when we released this, is on your team, which D&D character are you? So if you had to pick, this was asked of me this week and threw me off guard because I had never thought of myself in this capacity, in the real world. But which Dungeons and Dragons character would you be on the team, on your current team? And which one do you want to be?
I think I would be something like a cleric or something with just intelligence or...
Just massive intelligence, so you're just like max statted on your...
Probably like the Greybeard Wizard or something. I'm not a berserker. I'm not a healer. I'm not anything like that. I'm just kind of a...
You're just kind of there.
The keeper of records, the keeper of knowledge, the one that provides the recommendations. Kind of the lawful neutral kind of type.
Okay, no, I could see lawful neutral.
When I back when I did play D&D, I was a berserker, and my character was a very bad berserker. He ended up killing half the party. He crit failed 3 times in a row towards the end of the campaign, and yeah, a lot of our party ended up dead.
I could see that. I could see that. Yeah, no, I usually, my last character was a rogue who liked to trick everybody into teabagging each other. No joke.
Well, I guess that's, you know, you do what you gotta do. Was it like a trickster character?
It was just that the one day that we did. Usually, she was not. But on that day, she was feeling particularly trickstery.
You just have what became to know was an RVB incident.
Yes. Oh yeah. Oh yes. It was a good time. So who would you want to be? What would you want to be in your real life?
Oh geez. I don't know. I feel in a corporate environment, a berserker is usually frowned upon. I don't know. I'm kind of mostly blanking on what I would want to be. Remind me what you can be again. It's been a hot minute since I've done D&D last.
You can be a barbarian, a bard, a cleric, a druid, a fighter, a monk, a paladin, a ranger, a rogue, a sorcerer, a warlock, a wizard.
Ranger sounds fun. That sounds like you kind of get sent on very stealthy missions and things. Is that?
Yeah.
Am I remembering that right?
Yeah. Nope. You're right on.
I feel like I'm kind of like that already. I'm sort of like the ace in the hole. Like if all else fails and you need to send in the specialists, yeah, that's kind of what defines me, I guess.
A ranger would be more, you'd almost be more tanky, I think. You'd be, so like right now you're kind of cleric definitely is a good one. Cause you're there, you hold the power, the wisdom. But a ranger is really where you want to go.
Yeah, it's like, the ranger would be sort
and you get
of
a pet.
Yeah, I feel like the ranger would be a bit of a squishy character, though. Maybe less tanky and more relies on the stealth and agility stats than anything else, really.
Yeah, because they typically would send their pet in, wouldn't they?
They would send whatever scout or disposable unit first to get a lay of the land, and then once they have these analytical layout, they can go in for the reconnaissance or the kill or whatever it is they were sent in to do.
So that's definitely your level up then.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I described myself as a rogue. And because right now where I'm at, it's more of, and even when I was previously, I was more in like the sneaky, sort of almost like using trickery to overcome obstacles and get what I needed, and almost remained unseen but still did what I needed to do to get by. But where do I want to be? I want to be paladin.
Ooh, yeah, that's something.
I want to use my charisma and be awesome.
It's like achievement through diplomacy kind of things.
Yeah.
That does get you through meetings and does get, you know, you can get approvals and change controls or whatever through.
Right.
Through the proper channels, not like a tank or any other such character that would be less successful in such a situation.
Like a barbarian.
You probably have a higher chance of crit success than crit fail.
Yes, you'd roll a d20 more often, or you'd have advantage.
Yeah, like crit success is like you have a 5-slide PowerPoint, and everyone understood every slide, and they asked no questions, and they left the meeting just saying approved.
Now imagine a barbarian going in and doing a PowerPoint presentation.
It would be like incoherent slides, maybe like 1,000 like words scrolling off the page.
Yes, and then ending with "I'm hungry."
It was saying "I'm hungry" and "Bring me your finest steer" or something. Yes. That of which I may consume.
I like steak.
Steaky, steaky, steak.
Steak, steak, steak in my belly.
Can you imagine a barbarian like wearing a tie or something, or yes, attempting to blend in with a crowd?
It'd be so good.
It would be wonderful.
I have thoughts in my mind of who would have been the barbarian.
His work end point is his axe. It's very pointy at the end.
Yes. Yes. All right. Well, that's a fun one.
Yeah, that was good. That was nice.
Yeah, that's a good one. That was legitimately asked of me this week as a real-life advice, directional kind of conversation. So I thought it was interesting to bring up and kind of fun. So this week's, I really enjoyed the parting words.
Yeah, that was good.
So I kind of want to do it again because it was kind of fun. And so our parting words this week, we used goodbye last week. How about see you later?
Yeah, that's a good that can jettison into 1,000 different kinds of settings. So how was it? What did we say? 10 words?
I just completed my sentence.
Oh, okay. I'm already behind. So see you later. I'm just gonna start. See you later today, and then I'll check it on Monday. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, but one of those is a small word, so you know what? It's fine.
Are you using see you later as part of it?
I was. I could add 3 more if that is insufficient. Except that didn't really work out. I just added because I was presented and then heading. So I have to complete the sentence now. Heading to work. There we go. See you later today, and then I'll check it out on Monday, and then heading to work.
All right. See you later today. I have to leave for a little bit, and then I will be home in about a half an hour.
See, what I just made was basically a sentence that actually made sense. That kind of disappoints me.
Mine did too. See you later today. Okay, no, we need a new word.
When did autocorrect get good? I remember...
No, I don't like it.
This is not the autocorrect I remember from like 2010. 2011, 2012. The first Android phone I had, oof, that autocorrect was not great.
Yeah, last week I felt like they were okay.
I might have to find a better keyboard, or a worse keyboard. I guess the default iOS keyboard now is getting good at the autocorrect.
I like how when I want to use it, it's good, but then on a daily basis, I will type a word, and it's like I speak a totally different language.
If any folks are listening, you may feel free to submit your own if you think you can do it better than us, because clearly we're having enough trouble. So we've had updates since the last 2-ish podcasts. So the podcast is now available on pretty much every major platform now that you can think of, or at least all the ones that matter. We are working on getting some form of social media. I think we're targeting Reddit and Twitter. I believe Tiff is on that one.
Yeah.
So we'll soon have something in place where maybe this could facilitate better conversation or call and response type efforts of all kinds.
Yeah, we're doing stuff.
Do we have a question of the week, or do we have one from last week?
I don't think we had one from last week, but my question of the week is, what D&D character are you?
Yeah, that works for me, and it will work for the audience too, because guess what? That's the question of the week. What D&D character are you, particularly in the context of IT and or enterprise?
Or who do you want to be? If you don't want to answer who you are currently, because for all we know is you are the bard, and you are doing nothing but singing to your department and offering emotional support, that's great.
You have to start somewhere.
But maybe you want to be more. Maybe you do want to be the barbarian who does PowerPoints.
Absolutely.
But until then, dream big.
Dream big. Dream with big hopes. And with that, please advise. We hope this helps.